Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today we look at our relationship with nature. Research shows being in nature reduces anger, fear, and stress and increases pleasant feelings. A study in the International Journal of Environmental Health research shows spending as little as 20 minutes in a park, even if you don't exercise while you're there, is enough to improve well-being. This affinity we have toward nature is genetic and deep-rooted in evolution. Joining us to talk about that is social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. Good morning. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Mindy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So what about this genetic component rooted in evolution?
Well, I think it reminds us of where we are in life. You know, as humans, we're so wrapped up in our own worlds, what we've created, what we have to do, our responsibilities, et cetera. And we forget about really what it is to be alive. Nature, humans came from nature, basically.
We used to live outside.
We were always outside without building shelter, et cetera. And I guess if we used some shelter, it was in the caves, at least for a period of time. But we evolved in the outdoors, and we evolved adapting to the outdoors. And that's deep in our DNA, the capacity to adapt. And everything that we live around now, or not everything, but practically, is artificial, is man-made. You walk in the, we'll talk about walking in the forest, but one thing that's unique about the forest that struck me that I'd never really thought about is everything that is around you is either alive now or was alive. And that's got all sorts of smells, feels, an immersive kind of experience that we naturally gravitate to, I think because of we're all based on the same form of life, DNA. Everything comes from that, and it just so happened that this planet had the right conditions at the right time billions of years ago, that some chemicals got together and started to replicate themselves and started to use other substances as energy producers. That's the definition of life, is replication and energy production. So it's a chemical phenomenon. You can, if you want to believe that there's an intelligent designer behind it, you can. But the fact is that that's what it is the replication of chemicals. And our human existence is really the at this point, the culmination of it. It's still going on, and there'll be other, I imagine, other versions of the top dog in the in the tree as time goes on.
Yeah, you mentioned smells, and I'm just thinking, I think all my gardening friends out there will relate to this in the spring when you can smell the dirt again. You're like, oh yes.
You think of the indigenous cultures. That depended on the earth, depended on the forest, depended on the elements to survive. And certainly they had to attune themselves to the threats, and that's part of the, you know, our heritage, but also to the bounty and that whole amazing experience of the flower scents in spring, the bird song coming back. Without that, just there is the awe that hopefully we can continue to experience in this day and age. You have to sometimes seek it a bit harder, but that sense of awe, which is a connection to the whole.
And studies have shown there are health benefits to staying close to nature, both physical and psychological. I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? But, I mean, it can lower stress, lower your blood pressure. I mean, and this is sort of a newer study. I mean, this is something we haven't been studying for you know, a long, long time. But the research backs it up. There are health benefits.
There's correlational proof that there's health benefits. And there's also mechanism proof. For instance, suppressing cortisol or balancing out hormone levels with nature immersion or nature connection. You wouldn't think there might be a connection, but there is. I think we've all had the experience of going outside and wandering around and calming down after a short walk, even a short walk in the woods or around here. We're really fortunate with the beaches. Mm-hmm. A short immersion in that environment does something that's I don't think we're always that aware of it, but mm-hmm. it really enriches something about being alive.
Yeah. Well, you know, it occurs to me that as people have spent the last several thousand years actually working really hard to defeat nature. Mm. This is what we have done. Mm-hmm. You know, we have asphalt. We have homes that protect us from being too hot, being too cold. We've worked very hard to create a food supply so that we all don't have to be farmers, mm-hmm. so right. we can go to a grocery. You know, the civilization has been to a large degree about defeating nature mm-hmm. and stopping nature from killing us yes. or from requiring us to work any harder than we absolutely have to. So here we are today. We're sitting here. We're talking about how wonderful it is to be in nature. And we're the four of us sitting here, of course, are all in agreement about this. And probably most of the people listening are more or less in agreement, or else they probably would have already turned to another station. but I think it's worth keeping in mind how we got into the pickle that mm-hmm. we're in, where we have to, in a way, lobby people to do what at one time we had no choice but to do, which yeah. was to be outside much of the time.
Yeah. You know, interesting observation.
You know, I live in a house that, you know, I was chatting earlier, you know, that we just recently moved into. The entire house and all the doors are made out of triple pane glass, which is really great for conserving heat or cool. But I can't hear a damn thing when the you know in the right. winter when all the windows are closed. We have you know we have osprey at the house. We have all kinds of animals surrounding our house. I can't hear a bloody animal because yeah. the house is so airtight.
Go outside,
so you're not hearing right, the right. owls hooting at night.
Yeah, right. Not in the winter. I'm not. You know, and it's ironic, isn't it? I've spent a tremendous amount of money to protect myself from nature, and now I wish that you know maybe you could hear something through the walls.
Yeah. Well,
I appreciate that, you know, what you just said, Jonathan, because I think it's the Eastern-Western approach, mm-hmm. the Eastern approach, which is we are part of nature, we're yeah. one with nature, and the Western approach, conquer. Yeah. Conquer and use, and we're
control.
Entitled to
destroy.
This.
Destroy. Yeah.
So the one of the things that prompted my interest in this was I kept on hearing about forest bathing.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is I never heard of that before.
It's really funny. It's basically the translation of the Japanese term Shinrin Yoku, mm-hmm. which
of
is... of course, I knew that. And some researchers who basically learned of research that was being done in the States by a couple at the University of Michigan took the concept of what does nature really, how does it really change us? Let's get the data on this. So in Japan, they have forest therapy trails all over Japan, and they have guides, and they've been studying for many years now. They'll hook people up to blood pressure, ways to measure blood pressure and cortisol levels and heart rate. Take them, and the big study was have them walk 15 minutes in the urban setting mm-hmm. and then have them walk 15 minutes in a nature setting and measure the difference. And of course, every time the folks that traveled in the nature setting, they had a decrease in cortisol by 12%, a 1.4 decrease in blood pressure, 6% decrease in heart rate. So what they're saying is that the mere being in nature has this impact on our systems mm-hmm. that we know kind of intuitively, but now we are being able to measure, which in the past they weren't really able to measure mm-hmm. The changes in our bodies, mm-hmm. and taking that further and the implications of that's a 15-minute walk, mm-hmm. and what they've done in further studies is found out the more time spent in nature, the better the results, and of course. Anxiety and depression decrease as one becomes immersed in the natural setting.
Yeah. As you think about it, just think about how you feel. And I'm just thinking, as we're talking about forests, you know, people have different affinities for different types of nature. You know, do you like the beach? Do you like the mountains? Do you like the forest? And, you know, I grew up in Connecticut, not near the beach, and I played in the woods as a kid. And I love the woods. I love walking in the woods. And I wonder if it's partly what you grow up with, you know, that your affinity. And my husband grew up here in Falmouth. So to him, it's like he can't imagine living somewhere where there isn't a beach. Mm-hmm. They all give you that kind of, you know, feeling. It's just sort of whether you're at the beach or in the woods. And
well, you're usually moving through it, too. You're usually doing something. Mm-hmm. You can sit on the beach in a chair, and that you get benefits, obviously. But mostly you're moving. So, again, your respiration and your eyesight, mm-hmm. all of your senses are at work.
I think that's the point of, at least from what I understand from the reading, that's the point of the forest bathing, is to emphasize all the insight, all your senses, and to stop and taste, smell, hear. Otherwise, you might be more preoccupied with some task. I think that's one of the steps, or one of the how-tos for forest bathing.
Yeah.
It's interesting also when you think about boating, which mm-hmm. I know Mark and I both do. Sometimes I'm fishing, sometimes not, just boating. So there you are, if you're on the water, mm-hmm. you're not on land. You're hearing birds, so you're hearing certainly the sounds that one hears on the water. But it's somewhat of a less, in some ways, a less rich sensory experience than taking a walk through the forest, mm-hmm. and yet it's still so recharging, right? Mm-hmm. Revitalizing.
Mark, yeah.
you'll go off on your boat and just sit there and read.
Well,
there is something about water, whether the ocean or on a river or a pool. I have a swimming pool, and it's true. In the summertime, I float in my swimming pool and look at my garden, and that's the place you want to be, right?
Sure, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I've suggested to some of my clients who are not water phobic. And I have to find out which ones are and aren't. Hmm. Just go out in the bay and float, to be held by the water, to look up at the sky, to look at the blue. You feel the wind. You can smell the salt water. It's blissful. Hmm. It's blissful, and it's free.
Yeah.
And this is the point that I think we need to stress that. And I was when I was driving here, I was every 2 seconds I'm looking at these big, enormous, beautiful trees on Cape Cod, and I look over. There's a little sign: Nature Trail. There's conservation land. We are so fortunate, and yet there are people who live here who forget that the water's there, the forest, the woods are there, and it works. It works.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting. We all can't wait for spring, but in the winter when it's cold, and maybe there are some of us that don't want to go outside. But if you're dressed, I'm just thinking of skiing. I don't ever recall I don't want to get up on that mountain because it's cold. Right? But I do find I don't want to walk down the street today because it's so windy and cold. Right. But I can remember living in Vermont. When those first snowflakes fell, I was excited. You know, now when I see the snowflake, I'm like, oh gosh, I have to drive in this,
Right.
I guess it's all in your perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. 866-999-4626. Maybe you'd like to share what is your blissful spot in nature. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about our relationship with nature. And with us this morning is social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Katrina is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Katrina.
Hi. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I needed to point out, and I agree. There's no question about what you're saying about all this. But the one thing that we humans have kind of forgotten in some ways is that we are animals, mm-hmm. and we like to think of ourselves as humans and somehow separate from nature, like we're going out into nature. But we're electrobiochemical organisms, mm-hmm. And we are living in an environment or a habitat that we've created, for better or for worse, with all, you know, medicine and technology and science and just our way of living, but we're still animals.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
We, in forgetting that, we have to say, oh, okay, we're going to set this up. We need 20 minutes, you know, in the woods. Mm-hmm. When the fact is, it's a natural thing for us not to go out into the woods, but to go home, mm-hmm. basically, or go. I mean, that sounds corny, but I think that science forgets that we try to see things through human eyes, and the way our brains have evolved, we had to sort of secede from nature in a funny sort of way in order mm-hmm. to keep evolving. But in doing so, we have created this image of ourselves as being different from nature in many ways.
Yeah.
And we had to do it. I mean, we wouldn't have evolved the same way, mm-hmm. but now we're in a situation, especially with, you know, climate change and everything right. else, that this is our home. This is not something out there. This is our home. And we have the unique opportunity to make it good, yeah. make it bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're bringing up some really good points there, Katrina. Yeah. And now, I mean, there's this, for a lot of people, there's a fear of nature. You know, we look at, like, they're worried about the ticks and worried about going in the ocean because of the sharks. And sometimes I think our fear might be a little bit overblown, right? I mean,
oh, sure.
Spray some permethrin on your shoes, right? And then you can just go for that walk in the woods. But yeah, she's got a good point. Let's talk to Allison, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Allison.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great show. And I wanted to use it as an opportunity to put a plug in for our local land trust on Cape Cod. Of course, in Falmouth, it's primarily a 300 committee, but pretty much all the towns have one. And that's really, those are the reasons that we have access to all these wonderful places around here, in spite of all the development that, mm-hmm. you know, these organizations have really put effort into making sure that there are still natural areas, you know, well distributed and available to all of us. So just kind of a plug to support your local land trust and look at it as an investment in your health, your kids' health, your community's health.
Yeah. Thanks, Allison. That's a good point. That's right. I mean,
sure.
We're, you know, and even look at the National Seashore. Had that not happened, can you imagine the development that would be out there? We wouldn't have that beautiful stretch of the
I think
beach.
That's been influenced all the way back to the Transcendentalists and who really set the philosophy in and around the Massachusetts and Boston and coming out with Thoreau coming out here. There, it made us recognize the majesty of nature philosophically and as an area, honored it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it played a part in, I bet Kennedy read Thoreau.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to be capitalist about it, nature pays.
Mm-hmm.
It increases the value of a house.
Yeah.
The closer it is to nature, the more immersed it is in it, as opposed to right next to something else that's man-made.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Lily. Good morning, Lily.
Hi, Lily. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I wanted to thank you for emphasizing land trusts. I work for Barnstable Land Trust, and it's just really nice to hear these messages emphasized in a wider way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lily. Thanks for calling. You know, one of the things that, you know, what happens to us when we're nature deprived, and thinking of Richard Love's book, Last Child in the Woods, and his what nature deficit disorder. And I think that there's a point there that, you know, kids don't necessarily, a lot of kids, not all kids, but don't play like we did when we were kids. We know you go out and we just had to be home by dinner, right? And so a lot of kids are experiencing nature via screens, right? Whether it's watching something on YouTube or, you know, TV. And that's, you know, it's pretty pictures, but it's not the same thing as actually, you're not using all your senses like you do when you're out in nature.
Exactly. You're not immersed in it. You're just just a spectator.
Yeah.
And it's a different experience to be totally immersed in nature and that can activate and really speak to all your senses at once.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. Yeah. And I think in Sweden, they have nursery schools and kindergartens that are every day they are outside, mm-hmm. all day.
Yeah.
The reason being is they have a philosophy around that yes, the child is learning through their senses. And if all the senses are engaged, they're going to be stimulated and they're going to make their brains are going to create patterns that are, stimulate greater intellectual curiosity and greater sensitivity to natural things.
Yeah. And that, again, going back to that, and there are a lot of, here on the Cape, I know a lot of the preschools and things where the kids are outside every day, no matter what the weather. I know sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm looking, it's raining a little bit, and I get to my grandson's preschool, and I'm like, they're outside, mm-hmm. even though they're getting a little bit wet. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Stan, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Stan.
I just wanted to make a plug for the farms on the Cape that are open to the public and for community gardens those who want to eat some stuff while they're out there in nature.
Yeah, that's
The community garden here in town in Falmouth, the Marina Andrews Community Garden, is now accepting applications for the 2020 season.
Yeah, Stan, thank you for mentioning community gardens. That's sure. Not only do you get to garden, maybe you don't have enough space at your house or whatever, but you get to make some friends, and the community gardens are really just great. Yeah, so Stan, thanks for calling and telling us that.
Isn't it interesting how rich an experience gardening is for mm-hmm. so many of us, and people obviously aren't saving money by planting their own tomatoes or their string right. beans in their backyard, the amount of, time that's spent doing it, but the smell of the earth, which somebody referred to earlier, and smell being actually our most primitive sense, the first one to come along, and also the one for which we have the greatest memory, was the first thing that you mentioned, Mindy, when you were talking about, gardening and being in the earth. And that's almost like an accelerated or intense immersion in being outside.
Yeah. Also, I think it's great for kids. Kids, they're already so interested in nature. And what are they doing? They're picking up shells or rocks they seem to, and somewhere, I don't know where at that point they kind of, we take them out of nature somehow. I don't know. But kids can be picky eaters, and you start gardening and they start, helping you and eating the stuff in the garden, the stuff that they wouldn't eat before. Mm. I don't know. I think it's, those are the experiences. I remember as a kid, my grandparents gardened, and I didn't start gardening until I was an adult, but I can remember my grandfather's garden, and I always wanted to pick the flowers. And he was like, if you pick the flower, you're going to bring it home and you're going to enjoy the flower. But if it stays in the garden, everybody who walks by the garden is going to enjoy the flower. And I remember that. I don't know how old I was. I was a little kid, but it's so true, right? Well, I mean, there's a lot of lessons to be learned there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Let's talk to Janet, who's giving us a call from West Tisbury. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. I just came in from doing my horse, and I got into this program. I just wanted to tell you that Richard Loeb has written another book. It's called Our Wild Calling.
Mm-hmm.
How connecting with animals can transform our lives and save theirs.
Yeah.
It's his newest book. Yeah. So I think it's a really interesting book about relating to wild animals, domestic animals, and such. And I have many of those.
Yes.
Just wanted to let you know about this new book.
Oh, Janet, thanks for that. And that's another good point. Wild animals. We get some of us are very excited. We have a fox that wanders around here in Woods Hole, and every time we see it, we're like, oh. But there are people who I know. Sometimes when we have some of the biologists in here who say, oh, this woman called. She wanted us to get the osprey off her property, or whatever the wild animal is. It's like talk about shutting out the natural world. There are people who get really freaked out mm-hmm. about wild animals. But
this discussion also reminded me of something that is used in our field. In psychotherapy, one of the big advances, I think, with treating trauma has been the advent of what's called EMDR, which stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. A long phrase. But what it basically has to do with is a procedure where the person who has been traumatized is asked to just more or less daydream. But the first, and eventually they get around to daydreaming about kind of reliving the trauma while they're moving their eyes, actually, or they're being touched on both sides of their body alternately. The idea is to stimulate one side of the brain and then the other side of the brain. I'd keep doing that. That somehow has something to do with detoxifying the emotional pain that's involved in the trauma. That's the treatment. And it is remarkably effective, not all the time, but remarkably effective. But it starts out with, because the person is going to be dealing with, imagining, reliving scary things and painful things, it starts out with having them define for themselves what's called a safe space. And usually it's, the therapist will say, where have you found that you felt relaxed and safe and secure? Usually it's a place in nature, beach, woods, sitting out in your backyard, something like that. It's usually a place in nature. And then when that's you then have them basically process that. But they hold on to that image. And when the going gets rough later on in the treatment with the reliving the trauma, they then can return to it and reprocess it again, and that calms them. So here's an example where I think our field has grabbed onto something that is really very powerful without probably thinking it through as to what it all meant.
Yeah. And we actually have health providers writing nature prescriptions along with pharmaceutical prescriptions. That's sort of interesting. That's new.
Right. And that's encouraged. I think that's in Britain, I remember.
Yeah.
And it's encouraged. There's organizations that try to recruit doctors to do more of it.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And you were talking about how lucky we are to have this, you know, these great nature trails and the environment we have here. But, you know, when you're in some of the really urban areas, over the last at least decade, maybe a little more, we've seen like all the roof gardens that pop up,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And the parks. I know when you're in New York City and you can walk into Central Park, you're like, oh, it's like this, it's harder to find maybe some of these green spaces, if you will. But
there's been a amazing studies because we're very focused on Cape Cod, and we should be, and the South Coast, and many other areas don't have the luxury that we have, and many of the studies again have shown that they did a study in I believe it was in Sweden, where they noted that children that grew up in an area where there was green versus children that grew up in just blank urban areas literally had significantly lower amounts of mental disabilities and disorders. And that's, we know that. But what we have to remember is these studies influence public policy and influence architecture, influence hospitals. And that's where we take this lovely feeling of nature and say, well, what are the implications in other places that have been stripped of green, stripped of parks where the kids go and play on concrete and become more aware. And as we get into larger policies and choosing new presidents and that kind of thing, where do they stand? What are they looking at? What's their position?
And you bring up a good point about this role that nature is being used not only in park designs, but in buildings. And I was just thinking, as you were talking about that, I was thinking incorporating water. We hear a lot of you're sitting in a waiting room somewhere and there's this lovely little waterfall that's happening. And it makes you, even though you're not sitting out next to a real waterfall, it does sort of relax you for a few minutes, doesn't it?
Or an aquarium in a doctor's office in a waiting room.
Yeah.
Aquarium is so, isn't it?
I used to have one in my office, yeah, sure. That's right.
Yeah, so
you mentioned about the hospital. There is evidence that patients that have a room in the hospital that faces out on the outside, the sunlight, the nature, actually do better. with their illness as opposed to the inner ones.
I was surprised when I read that. And then it made me think, I was telling Ann before we went on the air, my aunt was very sick towards the end of her life. And you know, we get to the hospital and, you know, they're putting her into a room. I'm thinking, okay, she's going into a room. I can go home now to her room. And, and she's like, this is my room. It's so scary. And I said, what was so scary? And, you know, it had like a, you know, a curtain dividing between the two patients in the room. She was claustrophobic, which I never knew. But luckily she was next to the window. And as soon as I opened the curtain and she could look outside, it was like, okay, I'm good now.
Sure.
So that's a really good point. Let's talk to Joy, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Joy.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm really excited about the breadth of discussion around this topic. It's so important, as you've already mentioned, for medical and mental health, our policies and education. I'm going to resist amplifying everything that's already been said and try to add something new to the conversation. A connection or likely a reconnection with nature is also a really important aspect to innovation. And in the community here on Cape Cod, where we have so much science going on, I think it's important to kind of turn our eyes towards nature as a source of inspiration. And there's a field that's kind of grown up just relatively recently in about the last 20 years of biomimicry, which really depends very heavily on going out and experiencing nature and applying our curiosity in almost a childlike way. You know, nature education isn't important just for kids, but those of us who are experienced scientists can gain a lot by saying, how does nature do this function? How does nature sense oxygen? How do organisms in nature resist structural stressors like wind or waves? And just taking time and observing and being in the presence of nature is a whole new world. a little bit of a pun there, but you know, it is our world has so many solutions to some of the more serious challenges that we face. And it's a place where there's an intersection with technology. Steve Jobs famously predicted that the 21st century would be an opportunity for biology and technology to intersect. And he thought that's where innovation really was headed. And if we spend more time to appreciate nature, not only do we have benefits for ourselves personally, but we might be able to apply our creativity towards helping the world, both the human manufactured world and the natural world, to face some of our biggest challenges.
Yeah. Well, Joy, thank you. Thank you for calling, Joy. That's very well said. Thanks for that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about our relationship with nature. And with us this morning is social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. You know, I was thinking of just two thoughts. There are a lot of people, you know we're very lucky to live in this beautiful place. And people who visit, they always talk about when they get to the bridges, right? Mm. They come over the bridge and it's always like, I'm in my safe place, as you were saying, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering your thoughts on the impacts of climate change. You know, we have all these things that we worry our kids or grandkids might not get to experience. And how does that impact our relationship with nature?
Well, I think it's a mixed thing. It on the one hand, can motivate us to preserve and develop more, but it's also very, very frightening. It's mm-hmm. kind of a so vast a threat to the way we live that it's unimaginable that if climate change continues on the course that it's been going, we'll go the way of the dinosaurs, actually. So we don't want to think about it. Mm-hmm. We ignore it. Some people will criticize, say, the listeners to this show and ourselves as tree huggers, for instance, mm-hmm. That we're crazy about things that grow. Mm-hmm. And that's not where life is. You know what I mean? That it's that attitude that will be you're put down for. So it really is a mixed bag. And of course, we have the political climate about believers and non-believers, as if there's something to not believe about climate change. Mm-hmm. But people do. It's incredible.
Yeah. It will be very interesting to see how Australia responds politically over the next 5 to 10 years as a result of the fires. You know, it's interesting. Of course, the literally millions and millions of animals, billions of insects that have been lost.
Right.
But one of the things that I read was that unlike past large fires, this huge fire that's now, you know, still burning in Australia isn't even leaving patches of living things, you know, little islands which could then repopulate those areas. So, I mean, the vast areas are being completely 100% left barren.
Sad, yeah.
And, of course, the part of the fallout from that is that people are marching in the streets because the Prime Minister, the government of Australia, has really taken a pro-coal mining industrial stand over these last few years and has been publicly poo-pooing all of these nuts who are out there barking about climate change. So it's going to be interesting to see
that,
if there's a change of events right there on that continent.
Well, we got our change coming up too with nuts taking the same position. Hopefully we'll be able to change that in November.
Well, the thing is, the old phrase, think globally, act locally, that came out in the 80s, probably with, well, even before with Earth Day. That's the key. And I think that if you follow the sequence of what we're talking about today, what we all have stress, and here is an easy and free a way to reduce stress. And the more that you go to the woods or to the ocean or just a park, the more you notice, and the more you notice, the more you engage. And the more you engage, the more you want to do something about it. I've noticed, again, with Cape Codders and people who retire out here, at first it's all just a recreation, and then they, what can I do to give back?
Yeah, what can I do to preserve?
Yes,
yeah.
And I've I'm the seal protection team out at the National Seashore, and the folks have become experts on the gray seals, and they are out there for 4 hours talking to people coming along who are, what's that animal out there? What are they doing?
Yeah.
And here are these invested volunteers who are representing and protecting wildlife and representing the National Park Service. You feel involved. You feel engaged, and you feel like, it's tiny, but I'm doing something.
Doing something, yeah, I'm going to go back to my right whales.
Yes.
And it's interesting how many people don't realize how close you can actually get to those right whales walking along some of the trails in Provincetown. You couldn't get that close to them in a boat. I think it's shocking. My husband, who grew up here, a few years ago, I took him out there and we went out, and he couldn't. He goes, "I've lived here my whole life. I didn't know that you could do this." Right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of opportunities, I think, that we have that maybe we aren't always aware of.
The other thing that does, and everybody, you know, it that goes out on those whale watches, you hear, that is the awe experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what is that awe experience again? It's taking us outside of ourselves. It's taking us beyond ourselves into the majesty of creation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so powerful. And people, you watch people get off these boats and they're so excited and so thrilled because it's an awe-inspiring experience, such as climbing a mountain or...
Yeah.
And
it's
need
religious.
That.
It's a religious, spiritual experience.
Yes, exactly.
And there's something, computer vision syndrome, which is a condition from staring at the screen for long periods of time. And it can take a toll on your eyesight. It really does. And what's the solution? Spending time outdoors, especially in green areas.
Right.
I don't know, I guess the green offsets the blue screen.
It does.
Yeah, which is interesting.
They studied it. And
that doesn't mean going to the bank. by the way.
No, that guy. And, you know, it's interesting when you think, you know, in the winter it can, there's beauty in winter, but again, it's, you know, you can't wait until you can smell the dirt, as I was saying. And it's no wonder that they have the flower shows in the middle of winter, right? And when we have the stretches, like, this has not been bad so far, but when it gets really cold and you've got all that snow, and where do I go? To the greenhouses, right? Mm-hmm. Go to the flower greenhouses, mm-hmm. and you just kind of get that few minutes of almost spring.
Yeah. It's almost time for the orchid show, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, I think maybe.
Hyannis, I think at the end of January or in February.
Yeah, something like that.
Fabulous.
Fabulous. Go in and look at the orchids, and you just kind of get your fix of flowers in the middle of winter. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So talk about the contact with natural light. That's kind of a big thing, too.
With natural light?
Natural light versus, you know, when we're indoors with the artificial light.
Yeah, well, I think natural light consists of all the whole spectrum of light, as opposed to our artificial light, which is a narrow part of the spectrum. So there's something about... being exposed to the whole thing, which is the way we evolved. We didn't evolve with electric lights or gas lights or whatever. It was the whole spectrum. And that's what we do best in, because our bodies have evolved to do best in that environment. So it feels that sense of immersion and sense of warmth with exposure to natural light, which is basically, we're talking about sunlight. And of course, we know that sunlight makes a big difference. Sun exposure makes a big difference in our personalities. Mm-hmm. And it's been shown that people in the higher latitudes, for instance, aren't as agreeable, aren't as cooperative, and are more kind of pressured than people in the southern hemispheres, where the temperature is around 70, 75 or something. And that's been shown with some personality tests. And it was interesting because these personality tests were done at different latitudes, both in China and then both in the U.S. So there are two different cultures. So you can't say it's something mm-hmm. cultural. It's something to do with the sunlight exposure.
Well, it should be noted, too, that for people who have what's called seasonal affective mm-hmm. disorder, the treatment of choice really is light mm-hmm. therapy. Yeah. And you can now purchase for less than $50 a very nice compact light box. They sell them at pharmacies. They sell them online. You don't have to sit there and stare into it, but typically 20 to 30 minutes a day. Can actually reverse depression during the winter months.
Yeah.
Well, plus the vitamin D deficiency. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And apparently for children, it's a very big deal. It's like an epidemic of many children who don't have enough vitamin D, and then the obesity has tripled. So there are a lot of physical consequences that being outside, not only with light, but with activity help.
And you think about in the wintertime, everybody wants that beach vacation, right? Even though we live at the beach, it's like I was thinking when my husband and I lived in Indiana, at least here we have sun. In Indiana, in the wintertime, it's just gray, right? Mm. Just gray. And you can see it can be kind of depressing. And I remember it's like, okay, we got to have a sunny vacation, you know, while we were living, because, you know, get it. Their springs are absolutely beautiful, but winter, not so much.
Yeah, no, there's a chronic low grade mood.
Yeah.
It's just mild, but it's pervasive.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on people who fear nature for whatever reason? I know we don't have bears here, but I know like in Connecticut and western part of the state, people are like, oh, I don't want to walk hike in the woods. I might come across a bear. Or, you know, it's like, oh, I don't want to, you know, go out there because I might get bit by a tick and get Lyme disease. Or, you know, it's like there are people who, you know, have this sort of fear now of nature. How do you get over that?
Well, I think it's the medical profession should get involved. The therapeutic folks that are doing therapy, because usually those people have other issues too. Mm-hmm. Because the more you stay inside, the more fear that you have about the natural world, the more isolated you'll become.
And the more exaggerated your fears will get.
Exactly.
Anxiety, I'm thinking it would be an anxiety builder, right?
A little information, a little education also can go a long way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your supposed fear of ticks is just an excuse not to get outside, well, that's one thing. But if you would like to be outside and you have concerns, which are legitimate for sure, about being bitten by ticks, there are some pretty simple instructions that will enable you to take a walk outside and know with confidence that you're not going to get bitten by a tick. Or if a tick gets on you, you find it and you take it off. You tuck your jeans inside your socks. Mm-hmm. You wear long pants for sure.
Stick to the trail.
When you come inside,
inspect yourself.
Or have somebody else
shower.
Do it. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not rocket science. Yeah. Avoiding Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. No, the fear is there. That's okay. I mean, there are factual things in nature that can be harmful. Mm-hmm. But how do you react to the fear? That's the whole story. And people that do react with avoidance, I think you're correct in saying that they have other issues where they're more likely to go to avoid rather than explore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that has to do with a basic disposition, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also research that's revealed that people who exercise outdoors enjoy their workout sessions more and are more likely to practice it regularly than people who exercise indoors. That was surprising.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you just think about the difference between walking or running on a treadmill inside versus being outside. And
just think of the visuals and then the smells.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, you've got a much better smell outside than at a big gym.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it's true.
no reason to apologize.
Another piece of research that I thought was really great related to psychological issues is they've found that being in nature and walking in nature decreases rumination.
Yes.
And rumination is basically that idea that you repeat a thought or a feeling or anxiety over and over and over again. You just get stuck. And you get stuck. And it's usually devolves into poor self-concept and so on. Getting outside and walking seems to break that because your attention is elsewhere. Your attention is focused on adapting to the climate, looking at the climate, feeling, and it has a tendency to break rumination, which can be a really big problem psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, that's the one of the points about the benefit of forest bathing, for instance. Your attention automatically goes to the nature, as opposed to in rumination, you can't control your attention. It's just circling around some kind of negative emotion, a negative experience. But in nature, your attention just goes to it without effort. And that, I think, is the natural part of it.
Yeah. They say that 5 hours of being in nature a month
Only five.
Yeah. It can make a change. And the other thing that I just want to mention was that the brain rests best, like looking at a sunset when there's researcher Rachel Kaplan said, soft fascination.
What does she mean by that?
It's not overstimulating. Yeah. It's not, it's more the brain rests in soft fascination.
Okay.
So you think about something like a sunset and why we have, go to any landing at the Cod parking lot.
And you'll see all the cars. Yeah, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's because of the soft fascination.
Yeah. All right. Social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Swartz, and psychiatrist Mark Welly, thank you as always. See you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.